You know, I say communication, communication, communication. That's like the name of the game. And whenever you're embarking on any large change program, whether it's modernizing your systems or bringing new emerging technologies into your organization, ensuring that from the beginning that the vision is clear is critical because you want to earn people's trust.
Welcome to Technovation. I'm your host, Peter Hai. Our broadcast today comes from our most recent MetaStrategy Digital Symposium, and the topic was Technology, Digital, and Operations Leaders as Drivers of Speed. In this panel, I spoke with Jen Felch, the Chief Digital Officer and Chief Information Officer of Dell, and Mojgan Lefebvre, the Chief Technology and Operations Officer of Travelers. I hope you enjoyed the conversation. And now for a word from our partner, ASAP, and the company's founder and Chief Executive Officer, Gustavo Sapoznik, whose mission is to build machine learning products to solve some of the world's largest and most difficult problems. Well, Gustavo, take a moment if you would and describe ASAP's business.
We have a very, very simple mission. Our mission is to end bad customer service. It doesn't just mean the relatively miserable experience that we tend to have as consumers with the enterprises. It's more broad than that. The problem of customer experience, more broadly defined, can be really thought as a three-legged stool. One leg of the stool is the enterprise itself. Another leg of the stool is the customer. And the third leg of the stool is the agent that works for the enterprise. So what's remarkable about this problem is that all three legs, I can argue perhaps successfully, are very broken. If you are an enterprise, you truly dislike the idea of how much money you have to spend in this domain. So the economic problem for enterprise and how much OPEX is represent is just staggering. For customers, we're all customers of companies, so we understand the frustration. And agents have one of the highest attrition rates of any job type in the world. All of this to say we have this very simple mission of ending bad customer service for all of those constituencies.
And now on to the interview. Well, let's kick off our conference with our first conversation, technology, digital, and operations leaders as drivers of speed. I want to welcome two remarkable executives. First, Mojgan Lefebvre, the Chief Technology and Operations Officer of Travelers, the $41 billion revenue insurance colossus. In her role, she has global responsibility for all technology that impacts the company, its customers, agents, and brokers. Her technology operation team is 7,000 strong. She joined Travelers 6.5 years ago, and she's also on the board of Unum, the publicly traded $12 billion revenue insurance company. Jen Felch also joins us. She's the Chief Digital Officer and Chief Information Officer of Dell, the technology hardware, software, and services company that earns more than $100 billion in annual revenue. Jen's been with the company for 20 years and took her current role in 4.5 years ago. And her purview includes operating all systems that operate the company, from Dell's online experience with consumers to large enterprises to internal systems. And she also runs a customer zero program as the customer of Dell's products and services before other customers use them. Her team is 10,000 folks strong. Mojgan, Jen, welcome to the MetaStrategy Digital Symposium. It's great to speak with both of you.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Jen, I thought we'd begin with you. You and I spoke probably 3 or 4 weeks ago as we were doing some of the planning associated with this. And you brought up this point of speed as an important contributing factor, important factor to drive as a technology and digital executive. And I wonder, you know, as you think about this, and as you further made the point, the important aspects of both offense in terms of the processes and technologies that might be put in place to help facilitate that, but also defense through, for example, cyber hygiene. What have been some of the most important offensive and defensive catalysts for speed within a company like yours?
Well, thank you for the question, because when we, you know, oftentimes when we think about speed as a digital organization, we're thinking about, you know, our agile processes. Are we doing continuous improvement, continuous development, right? Like, how are we deploying new capabilities? And we spend a lot of time on the process and our DevOps pipelines and how quickly we can deploy. Those things are awesome. But what struck me is when I was talking with a peer at another company, and we talked about, like, how do you really prepare for some of these, just whether it's a cyber event or it's dealing with vulnerabilities or it's dealing with what happens to us is what we refer to as a zero-day vulnerability. You need to patch it immediately. And you honestly don't know where it's going to be. I mean, if you knew where it was going to be, you would have patched it before it became a 0 day. So, you know, what we got to was like, well, the best way to be prepared for that is not only like taking care of things as early as you can, but you need to figure out how to get fast. You need to be fast. And when I say that, it's like, okay, well, what does it really take to be fast? Well, how quickly can you patch? Okay, great. I need to be able to do deployments in an automated way. I kind of need to have an inventory of all the components that I have. I need to have a full inventory of my environment. Ask a lot of companies what their CMDB looks like, what their software BOM looks like. If you looked at every device, virtual environment, their cloud infrastructure, what does it look like? And so this mantra about saying, you know, your best defense is a good offense, which is all about speed and practice. How can you practice being really fast at deployments, not in a haphazard way, but in a very skillful way? And I hate the interrupt. I hate the interrupt in our process of like, hey, there's a 0 day. Well, I didn't create it, but we need to fix it. We need to address it. And so how do you get efficient and fast at doing those things? And it kind of pulls together all elements of your process, your technology, your team, who owns it, who's responsible for validating the patches. So that's how it came about. Like, if you're going to do one thing, just be fast.
I like that. I was sticking with you for a second longer, if I may, Jen. Process change sometimes is considered tantamount to gumming up the system, really the antithesis of speed. And I wonder how you've created awareness and appreciation for process as a means of fostering nimbleness.
I love that question. So I'll say that sometimes when we have people outside of the process we live in, they come in and they say, we have a new process for you. It gums it up. We always say like, huh, you know, that's probably not going to work. But what I think really works well is when you listen to the people that live in the process every day about what their pain points are and what opportunities they see, then you have the opportunity to change the process for those goals. How do we get faster? How do I eliminate delays? How do I get infrastructure, you know, really quickly? How do I eliminate bureaucracy? So at least what I've found is that if you listen to the practitioners, they usually have the ideas that you need to implement. And that's how you drive a process change that gets embraced for speed and agility or security and compliance, whatever the opportunity is, you know, listen to the people who live it every day.
That's great insights all. Mojgan, I'd love to draw you into the conversation. You've spoken about the cultural elements necessary to foster speed and nimbleness. And I wonder how you fostered a strong culture that's a force multiplier from a speed perspective.
Sure. Great question. And I loved what Jen said in terms of, you know, it's about your operating model, your, you know, how your elements and architecture are set up. And then, of course, the people, as you said, the teams, right, Jen? I think everything comes down to people, really. And no leader can drive change without the involvement all of the teams. And so the cultural elements and the mindset of the people becomes something core. So one of the things that we did early on before we started our large transformation about 5 years ago was really put it in the hands of our teams to say, come up with the cultural beliefs that you think are critical to the changes that we're about to make. And so what came back was really four elements of customer first, empower and act, test and learn, and then finally prioritize. These were the four areas that the team said, you know, if we want to be able to do our jobs effectively and make change, make large scale change, these are important. And so in empower and act, I think there's a lot of power, meaning, you know, again, how your teams are set up, what the operating model is, which, you know, again, as many companies have been driving towards these product-minded cross-functional teams that can be as autonomous as possible so that they can take the decision-making in their own hands. And that becomes important because they have the ability, they know what they're going towards, and they've got the ability to make decisions without having to go and get permission at all points in time. And yet also act. So taking action, you know, the whole concept of ownership and accountability and making sure that you're acting on behalf of travelers at all times and really driving towards results. And then, of course, you know, I think the whole concept of test and learn and experimentation is core and critical to driving innovation, giving people the permission to test things. It's okay if you fail, but if you do fail fast, fail well, learn from it. And again, you got to learn from it and then apply that learning and make sure others learn from your learnings as well. And then I'd say ultimately, really, again, making sure that at all points in time, we're setting high standards, driving ourselves forward, but then making sure that you're providing that psychological safety that it's okay. Again, drive towards the high standards, but you don't want to create stress in the system. You don't want everybody to be afraid all the time. You want to make sure that they know that if things don't work and they, you know, they can't achieve those high standards, they've got the ability to, you know, step back and try again. So these have just been absolutely critical in making sure that, you know, everyone in the organization, bottom up and top down, are really involved. And we actually set a process where we enabled people to actually send e-cards when they saw their teammates embodying these behaviors. And so it just became something that's become really part of how we operate, and our cultural beliefs are kind of like core to a lot of how we really behave and collaborate with each other.
Yeah, very interesting. I really like that. And the extent to which this is something that becomes pervasive across the organization, really making it real. Terry, why don't we call up the responses to the poll that we just had prior to this conversation to see where our audience's heads are. So what is the biggest driver of speed in your organization? 41% of you have indicated automating internal processes. Very interesting. Followed by modernizing legacy systems. So some themes that we've sort of brushed up against here, certainly, and great to get each of your responses. Thank you so much for your contributions to that. Mojgan, staying with you for a moment longer, I wanted to ask you or reflect on the fact that in a recent conversation, you said to me, the technology is easy, it's culture and change management that are the challenging elements. We just talked about culture and some of the ways in which you think about that. Talk about the role that change management plays in fostering better speed from your perspective.
Yeah, you know, I think, again, you know, nothing can be adopted if people don't want to. And so making sure that you're bringing people along, I think, is absolutely critical. And, you know, I always say that the technology is easy, not that it was easy to create the technology, but if you think of Gen AI, even though it hasn't really achieved a lot of like where it's going to go yet, but it still works pretty darn well, right? And yet people are running into roadblocks. Why? Because, you know, it's again bringing people along, making sure that they understand the vision, the benefits of what you're doing. It's absolutely critical. And so communication, you know, I say communication, that's like the name of the game. And so the ability to, whenever you're embarking on any large change program, whether it's modernizing your systems or, you know, bringing new emerging technologies into your organization, ensuring that from the beginning that the vision is clear, the benefits of why you're doing what you're doing is clear, is critical, because you want to earn people's trust. You want to make sure that you're as transparent as possible about what you're telling people and live up to it. And then again, also making sure that at the same time, you're empowering people to disagree with each other with backbone, but again, transparently and with respect. And that becomes critical as well. And then again, any change is about really probably new capabilities and skills. So having the right learning and training programs and the ability to upskill becomes pretty important as well. And then, you know, I'd say, again, the whole notion of embracing the ability to experiment, act, really like having an action-oriented tendency so that you actually start seeing results sooner than later. I know if you've got to, you know, you've got to iterate and make changes sooner than later, rather than months and months of analysis. So again, I say those are really the elements that I think are absolutely critical to driving any change forward, and then making sure that all the right people are involved and they feel that they're a part of it. you know, not necessarily something is being to them, but that they're actually part of that change. They can provide their input and they can actually make a difference. Because I think at the end of the day, you know, people want to do the right thing. They want to make sure that they're actually playing a role as well. And so bringing them along and giving them that capability or that ability is important.
Great point, Saul Mojgan. Thank you so much for explaining your methods in accomplishing this and the critical role that that plays. Jen, you've noted that your Dell Digital team strives to aid the broader organization to modify or create code faster. And I wonder if you could talk a little bit about the methods that you all are using to do that.
Yeah, I guess I'm going to build on what Mojgan said. If you believe, which I think we, at least those of us on this call and the seminar would believe, which is that people want to do great work. They want to continue to build their skills. They want to see that they're delivering something. They want to see the results of what they're doing, right? Then how can we as technology leaders help people to do that? And I think that comes down to saying, you know, let's try this experiment. Let's try your idea and see the results, not in 3 months or 6 months or a year, but let's see what we can do in 2 weeks. And then let's build on that and see how it goes. And I tell you, like, it's so energizing when you have a team that they have the context, they are empowered, they know that they have access to build the skills that they need. It could be that they're using, you asked about developing code faster. We have all kinds of great experiments going on, both with the Codium team and Varun that's coming on later, and Copilot, so people can experiment with Gen AI tools to be faster. But what's really satisfying is to actually see your product, see your software being used by people, seeing it deliver the value for the business. And so, you know, when much like the poll said, the more we automate those internal processes, the more we eliminate the drudgery from the processes that we live in at big companies, then the more we can start to deliver value. We can deliver a little piece of where we're going and get, you know, the vision becomes more, it becomes clearer. And then we develop a little bit more. And I kind of love it. I mean, I love it because when you feel like you're contributing to your company, to your customer's experience, you're making things better, you're innovating, that's hugely rewarding for people. And it starts to build that flywheel of let's keep going, like let's keep eliminating waste, like we're onto something good. And when that happens on a team, it's just magic. So.
And that's really interesting. It brings to mind, Jen, the whole notion I mentioned in the introduction, the Customer Zero program that you have as a digital executive in an organization whose customers, in many cases, are your peers. The extent to which you are using the very products and services of the company, you can do so in ways akin to your peers in other organizations. And talk a bit about the methods you're using. You talked about automating internal processes to remove the drudgery, for example, the ways in which you're doing so, and then by extension can provide broader suggestions on how it might be done more broadly in the marketplace.
When we think about our Customer Zero program, and I tell you, it's like awesome to be the CIO at a technology company because, you know, we have like 130,000 CIOs. I just have the legitimate job. That's a joke. is that we have there's lots of great ideas about how things can be done. And so, you know, generally what we do is we really lean on our product groups that are, you know, they're innovating every day with customers around the world about whether it's infrastructure or software and services or, you know, our end user devices or peripherals, conference rooms, you name it. Like it's all across the board. So we work really closely with them on what they're talking to customers about, what they're developing, and then we practice and then we use them internally. And just like I talked about that feedback loop, as we're developing digital solutions, let's say with a business function, we do the same thing with our product group of we give them feedback on a regular basis, and they're fantastic about listening to us and looking at what we're doing, not only offering suggestions, but improving the products. And so, you know, while I made that joke about all the CIOs at the company, it's also a direct pipeline to a really key technology partner for us that we feel pretty privileged to have. And then we get to talk to lots of customers too. So that's fun. I mean, I think that's pretty fun for me and my team.
That's really great. Yeah, what a luxury. Even if there are a lot of people who feel like they could do your job, it sounds like. Mojgan, I was going to ask you, in our most recent conversation together, you talked a lot about the investments the organization is making into generative artificial intelligence. And a couple parts of the question, I wanted to ask you, first of all, prioritization is obviously a catalyst for speed, making sure that you're prioritizing those ideas that are best and potentially most meaningful and casting aside the other ideas that may be more noise, as opposed to value creating or accretive. So first of all, I'd be interested in how you think about the prioritization process and the extent to which you might reflect some of those things that are being prioritized forward as use cases. Be interested in hearing about that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So you know, as I said, prioritize was actually one of the kind of four cultural beliefs that the team came back with. Why? Well, because I said, you know, at all points in time, and I think every CIO, of course, faces this. Like, there's so much demand coming at you, and so you've got to have the ability to prioritize. I think what makes it easy is, you know, ensuring that you're always thinking about the fact that you want to make sure you're as aligned as possible to where the, you know, your business, you as a business, are going, and making sure that what you're doing really is adding to the bottom line, whether it's through reducing cost and creating efficiency or creating additional revenue through new products and services. And so as long as you have that in mind, I think that should really be the driver of priority. I think in the case of Gen AI, there's also the fact that, you know, wherever there's a lot of, I would say, words, images, and numbers, I mean, that's what generative AI can really fit well. And so keeping that in mind, so anything with, you know, sales and marketing and customer service, I mean, those are absolutely the areas where this assisting technology can really, you know, act as an assistant and can continue to get better as you cooperate with it and collaborate with it. So keeping those in mind, that's really kind of the guidelines for us in terms of prioritization. And so what we did very quickly, Peter, we actually have our AI accelerator team that we set up around 5 years ago, because again, we believed all along, being a data company, that, you know, AI is going to have a huge impact on our industry and our organization as a whole. And so that group very quickly worked across the organization and ran a lot of workshops where we came up with, you know, literally hundreds of use cases. And so there was no doubt in our mind that we had to prioritize, because we also wanted to make sure as we went about building solutions, you know, whether they were proofs of concepts or more scaled, that we were doing it the right way, and that, you know, we were leveraging best practices and making sure that we're staying within the guardrails and adhering to our responsible AI framework and so on. There's really a handful of use cases that we've prioritized, and some of them actually we're in the process of scaling and rolling out. Our first set of use cases are indeed based on, you know, taking a lot of the curated documents that we have in, whether it's in our claim organization, our underwriting organization, and really leveraging Gen AI's capability to like pull things together and have the ability to search very quickly and really become probably the first very effective knowledge management system. Because, you know, we all know that like knowledge management has been something that everybody's been grappling with. And so our claim knowledge virtual assistant, which is being rolled out to all of our claim professionals, all 13,000 or so, is something that, you know, we're going to leverage, and it's persona based. And depending on the product that you're dealing with, your tenure in the organization, you've got the ability to ask questions, and it comes back, you know, with answers, really leveraging, again, the great data and information that we've pulled together over the years. And then, you know, then there are other sets of use cases that we're focused on, whether it's HR related and, you know, has to do with job descriptions and recruiting or other areas. And so many of them for now are actually internally focused, because we want to make sure that we, you know, can scale it and become really good before we actually turn it around and actually start using it with our customers as well. But we know that there's a lot of value that's going to come out of those use cases that you know, can be leveraged externally too.
How interesting. Double clicking for a moment on the idea of your AI accelerator. Can you talk a bit about how you staff that, how you brought that together? What an interesting concept.
Yeah, it was about 5 years ago, again, you know, starting with the leader for that organization where, yeah, I can't, I'll embarrass him, and if he's listening, I can't say enough about, you know, having really the right leader at the helm and who can build the right team. And so we've got a team that's actually, you know, probably around 50 or so strong, so to speak, with given the objective that really their role was to federate AI across the organization. Because at the end of the day, I would say, you know, ultimately all of your software engineers and data engineers have to have the ability to leverage this new technology. And now, you know, with Gen AI, that's even getting federated even beyond just engineers, so to speak. And so really that team has been set up. They've got the right mindset that they're there to really make sure that they're teaching others. I mean, they run hackathons where they get together and actually teach people how to code Python and really how to use the new technology or code in the new technology. And so it's just a team that's that then gets embedded into different parts of projects that we have inside the business. And really, again, making sure that everything that they're doing is really aligned to some business outcomes that we're driving towards. The other thing we've done is we have engineers who actually from different parts of our business get embedded in this group and really get immersed in learning. And then after 3 months or so can go back to their business and actually bring all of that learning to the rest of their organization.
Very interesting. Well, thank you for sharing that anecdote. And more generally speaking, Mojgan, Jen, thank you both for a terrific conversation, offering a great counsel for all of us on some of the levers to pull to ensure that tech, digital, operational executives are in fact masters of speed for their organization. It's been great speaking with you both.